I love the following poem. I may have shared it with you last year, so if it sounds familiar, you'll know why. Sometimes when I note the utter stupidity of my fellow men, hear and see them lie, cheat, and wrangle, I fold my wings and adjust my halo at a little better angle. I had a kind of Alexander day this past week. You know, the one who went to Australia, maybe. And my halo took a beating. It started last Monday. Now, many of you may know, because I think I mentioned this last year too, that we own a 2009 Volkswagen Jetta diesel. I guess you've heard the news. I seem to remember bragging that we could use the fuel-efficient parking space at the mall. We chose it because it had such great mile per gallon ratings, but mostly because it was advertised as such an environmentally great car. So yes, I've been feeling pretty darn righteous for a little over six years now. Some days I was more successful than others at not judging the choices of everyone else on the road. If you own a Prius, that may feel familiar to you. So many you use own Priuses, I'm not kidding. So imagine my chagrin at having to pretty much fold up my wings altogether and put them away when we found out, along with the rest of the world and apparently most of you, that our fuel-efficient and excellent car is a fraud, and we've actually been contributing excessively to the world's carbon footprint for each of those 6 years, every day. An Alexander moment. I was so annoyed and frustrated with the news that I skipped lunch to go to IKEA and get a new desk, thinking I might feel better and more productive if my office functioned better, which of course required that I drive there. But then I got so hungry, because if you've ever been to IKEA, you know it is this endless maze of consumer opportunity. So I got really hungry and I ate the only thing I could find around there, which at IKEA is a hot dog for 75 cents. Two for a dollar with a soda if you want. Now, I haven't eaten meat since I watched Cowspiracy last spring. Right? Thank you, Andrea Cherez, which was a great movie and very empowering, but I had been feeling pretty righteous about that too, only now I succumbed and bought a hot dog. So when I told my husband about it, because I like took a picture and sent it to him on my phone, he said, "Was it all beef?" I don't know. I was into self-pity at that time. So, and then on the way home, since I'd already fallen off my highly elevated wagon, I stopped at McDonald's and got a small fries and a small Coke. A friend of mine told me it takes a year to digest McDonald's French fries. So I think maybe they have them when I get to Australia. By the end of the day, not only was I feeling abandoned by my own good judgment, I was feeling cheated by the world at large, certainly by the Volkswagen people and the hot dog people and the corporate McDonald's environment. I haven't even mentioned Spectra Energy and the pipeline yet, so let's not go there. I know, describing my Monday last week, that the relative seriousness of the various issues that I just described doesn't necessarily equate one with the other. But I want to paint a picture here that calls to mind a time when each of you might have felt, or still might feel, at odds with your world, what we might think of as being in a kind of exile of sorts, from what gives us comfort or security, what allows us to feel that things are right in our world. We all experience days, sometimes weeks, sometimes months, when we do not feel necessarily at home in our bodies or our minds or our hearts, When things are out of sorts, they are just not right for a huge variety of reasons. My example is undoubtedly trivial by comparison. Perhaps your job has changed. Perhaps your relationships have changed by choice or by circumstance. Someone close to you may be struggling, or your rhythm may feel out of whack, if not now, then at some point in your past. And the question that begs asking is where we find the assurance or the hope that this experience, this state of ill-being, this feeling of dis-ease, of exile from our better selves, where do we find the hope that it will not last forever? Like our hymn this morning, The Rivers of Babylon, we wonder how or wonder if we can sing in this strange land that we find ourselves. The lyrics recall the exodus of Jews from their homeland in 587 of the Common Era. The recognizable for these people was gone. They sat on the banks of an unfamiliar river, and all felt lost. Where was their song, and when would they be able to sing again, if ever? How can we sing King Alpha's song, the one of assurance and comfort, when we find ourselves in a strange and unsettled land? We see this same question in Elie Wiesel's recounting of his experience at the age of 15 in Auschwitz. He carried the story that he heard earlier with him for years before turning it into a play called The Trial of God. In the foreword to a 1995 publication of this play, Robert McAfee Brown comments, "Wiesel has often been asked why he writes so determinedly about Jews rather than about universal humanity. His answer is convincing. When he writes about Jews, he is writing about all people. For the particularity of Jewishness is in reality a vehicle through which to explore what goes on in every human heart." Which is to say, we all experience at some point or other a sense of abandonment, a sense of being left out in the cold and wondering where to turn, of having lost our music, comparing our daily frustrations or challenges, even the large-scale ones, with the extremes of a Holocaust experience may seem out of balance, and yet the vehicle is there, because the human heart experiences regardless of scale. And so again, the question it begs is where we turn to be assured that all is not lost, that we can gain our balance again, that we can find our way home. Has someone you loved died? Has a child gone off to college? Have you recently relocated? Have you been disappointed by something? Does your heart hurt in some way? Or have you simply had an Alexander kind of day? Do you long for something different? Various traditions approach the idea of hope differently, of course. In a powerful book called Hopeful Imagination, theologian Walter Brueggemann explores biblical prophetic voices and their relationships with hope. The yearning for equilibrium, he suggests, is an idolatrous escape from reality. He would have us know that change is recurrent, that nothing escapes. So perhaps one begins to build a foundation of hope with the recognition that things are not what they were, nor will they ever be again. We can grieve our losses. We should grieve our losses. I can never go back to a time of not knowing that someone lied about my car. That is a part of my new reality, the disappointment, a part of my life experience. What I do about it now, how I manage the sense of betrayal, which in this case is certainly impacted by the degree of my pride, has to begin with that recognition. There's no going back to pre-awareness. There's only now, and a curiosity about what next, perhaps an idea of what I would like to be next, which is where hope comes in. In Wiesel's story from his visit with the scholars, the trial ends, the Lord God Almighty is found guilty, and then what do? They pray. They look at the sky, they recognize the time of day, and recite the evening prayers. This is the familiar, at least, though not the simplistic. For the person of faith in a Lord God Almighty, the familiar can bring comfort. Brueggemann describes both the toughness of their challenge and the submissiveness of their resolution. This life was understood by the rabbis, who never tried to slot things or reduce life with God to a system, but who kept a full life open with God, he says, with both the pro and the con of life. But what about those of us who have challenged those theologies, whose spiritual lives sometimes feel they are experienced in exile from specific tradition? What have we who journey without creed to rely on? In our free religious journey, some of us have found solid footing in particular theologies, whole and heartfelt beliefs in a loving God, called by whatever name. Practices of meditation with or without organized sanghas or gatherings, or earth-based traditions that feed our spirits. But many of us wander somewhat betwixt and between, which isn't necessarily an issue until push comes to shove, until something in our lives goes off kilter and we are left wondering how to respond. Hope is a way of responding to the world, and I do not believe it is exclusive to one tradition or excluded from any tradition. Even the Buddhist or the Taoist who is intent not to place weight on a particular outcome may imagine one that gives them pleasure, one towards which they are willing to apply themselves. And this, I think, is a major foundation of hope, that we are willing to apply ourselves to its fulfillment. Hope requires acknowledgement of loss, and engagement in possibility. It is the response of our imaginations that recognize the need for something reconciled. And it requires our engagement. Passive hope is like wishful thinking, which is okay in some circumstances. I hope tomorrow will be sunny. I have no ability to affect it one way or the other. But deeper hope, the kind that feels a need for change, requires me to be a part of it. The rabbis prayed actively and intentionally. The holy person in the store provided the seeds, but the person of hope must do the planting, the caretaking, the nurturing. We must be participants in our hope, participants in creating the healed heart, the return from exile, the arrival to a new home. Fold up our wings, put down our halos. This is humble work. When life offers change, as it does all day, every day, we must notice the places where we get lost, where knowledge is insufficient to our experience. We must acknowledge the passing of the predictable so that we can be ready to create anew, to sing a new song in a new land. When we see the dis-ease, when we feel the discord, when we suffer the awareness of our exile, we can engage ourselves in hope. We can take the packets and plant or pray or struggle together to nurture something renewed and redeemed. At the end of Wiesel's play, one of the rabbis recognizes that even though they have indicted and found God guilty, the problem is still not solved. I ask you a question and dare you answer, the poet said. What is there left for us to do? And McCaffey Brown, concluding the foreword, suggests, only everything. Hope is not a panacea. It is an inclination, a way of responding to the awareness of change that needs reconciling, but it is our work, active, imaginative, and engaged. And when we take it on, we can find a new song.
There's a truth beyond our knowledge. There's compassion beyond our pain. There's a
so may it be.